Reset your system clock to 1992 and join us on today's Multimedia Hyperguide Tour of Windows 3.1. Hello again, folks. It's great to be here. This is your friend Super VGA. Today is going to be a rather short show. I'm not going to be going into a lot of technical detail, at least not the kind of technical detail we've gotten more used to as I try to figure out what the structure is and what the setup of this show is. Today is Father's Day in North America. I actually don't really know where else Father's Day is celebrated. This could be, is likely to be one of those Hallmark holidays. But nonetheless, my family celebrates it. I celebrate it. My father passed away several years ago. But today I wanted to, remember him and celebrate the kind of man he was. I won't have a, let's say, directly Windows 3.1 story to tell you today. But it's an experience, something that happened during my family's Windows 3.1 period where we had the PS1, as always, that I talk about. This happened on a day where my father called me very excited. We had a few changes in our family. My father was a carpenter. He was a construction guy, not the most, let's say, technically adept person. And to be honest, he did not like computers one bit. When we got our PS1, I was trying to teach him how to use Microsoft Works to write up invoices for his business. And he grabbed the mouse backwards, so the wire was facing towards him instead of away from him, and started moving it around. And he said, "What the hell's wrong with this rat anyway?" And I had to show him the proper orientation for a mouse and remind him that it's not a rat, it is a mouse. But during this period, my father, despite not being very good with computers, in fact, I think he used a computer less than 5 or 10 times in his life. And I remember him specifically sending one email in his life before he passed away. He was actually quite interested in technology. He liked technology. He liked something about technology, despite, again, not loving computers. And one day he called me from his car phone. This was a big change for us in the early 90s. Not only did we have a new computer, but my father decided to invest in one of these funky new car phones that we saw in, 1980s movies. He decided that since he worked on so many distant rural work sites, that he needed an easier way of getting a hold of his clients. And the best way to do that was to buy this huge Nokia contraption that was mounted in the middle of his truck front seat. And you could make phone calls with it, and it had a big green send button and a big red end button. And I believe it cost something around $1 a minute to make a phone call. In fact, it might have been quite a bit more than that. I remember we were strictly not really allowed to make phone calls using the car phone. He was the only person to talk on it. But what happened on this day was I got a call at home from my dad, and he sounded really excited. He said, "Pack up your stuff. We're going to the city. We're going to go buy a fax machine." I thought, whoa, fax machine. That was something new to our family. WinFax Pro, for anybody who remembers that piece of software, I don't think had quite come out yet. And faxing was a rather new thing with modems. The idea of getting a fax machine for our home was a big deal. This is something you'd only see in a corporate office, or maybe like a very, very rich person's home office. So I went with my dad to the city. He came and picked me up at home, and I just got a text message that I I should ignore. So we drove towards the city, and he was almost shaking in his seat. I don't know what what prompted him to want a fax machine so badly that day, but he really was intent on getting one. So I thought we were going to go back to the Future Shop because this had become kind of our touchstone for buying new technology. After we got the PS1, we all kind of recognized it as the best place to buy something new. But instead, my father drove to a government auction surplus warehouse. This was kind of in a skeezy part of town, close to, I remember, and in fact, I believe it's still there. It was close to this beat up motel, the kind of motel that you saw in Police Quest 2, that, you know, Jesse Baines is hiding out in, or whoever that was in the game that's hiding out in it, and police are kicking in the door. It was kind of wedged between this seedy motel and an even seedier bar down the street. It was on this kind of rough, industrial service road. So when we got inside, I thought, okay, this is kind of weird. This isn't what I expected at all. We stepped inside and my dad said, you know, where are the fax machines? I want to buy a fax machine. He hated salespeople. He was always expecting them to, you know, rip him off. So the guy said, oh yeah, don't worry. Fax machines are right at the end of aisle number, you know, 36 or something like that. And just go right through those doors into the warehouse and go to the very end. I think it's close to medical supplies. And I thought, oh, medical supplies? Weird. And he's like, he said something like, it's in between the medical supplies and the computers, which, oh, boom, my head exploded. I thought, whoa, you guys sell computer stuff here? Cool. So as we drove down the, as we walked down the aisles, we got to the very end of the aisles, and I don't know what I was expecting. I think in my head, when I thought computers and government, I thought I'd find like an ENIAC or UNIVAC mainframe. As far as I was concerned, you know, the only computers government workers had were like supercomputers hidden, like a Cray or something hidden away in a secret server room. And when we got there, I remember being very, very disappointed because all I found were kind of these old, old discarded AT keyboards. You know, they were kind of crusty, covered in dust, with those huge DIN plugs on the end. If you remember what a DIN plug is, that kind of round plug that was superseded by PS2. And a bunch of Ambra monitors. Ambra was a company that sold amber-colored monitors. They were fairly good quality, but these ones looked like they had been through a war. The monitors, in fact, had burn-in. They had been used for some sort of spreadsheet for accounting. It looked like DOS to me, to be honest. And all you could see was this ghosting over the screen where the numbers had actually burned into the screen. Actually, it wasn't even the numbers themselves. It was the frames to the spreadsheets that had burned into the screen. So obviously somebody was forced to stare at this tabled worksheet for hours and hours and hundreds and thousands of hours of days until the monitors were retired. And instead of throwing them out, they sent them to the government surplus auction warehouse where they would be bid on and sold. Well, I took one look at these things and realized, whoa, you know, our IBM PS1 monitor is way better than this. Ours is VGA and it's color. So when we got to the end of the aisle, and I'm just rattling this off from memory, the salesperson had followed us down the aisle and he said, my dad looked around and he said, I don't see any fax machines. Where the F are these fax machines? He was a pretty rough guy. And the salesman said, oh, right there. And he pointed up on this higher shelf. These are these huge industrial shelves that you'd imagine in a Costco warehouse or something. And up on it was, I'll never forget this, a Samsonite suitcase. Samsonite is a suitcase company in North America. A gigantic blue suitcase, the kind you'd, you know, you'd imagine packing 2 weeks worth of clothes inside. And it had locks on the front and those two little lever things to snap open the suitcase. And my father kind of did this double take and he said, well, how much is it? I'm not paying more than, you know, $50. And, And I kind of gave my father a strange look, like, this is a, you know, again, my father was so much into bargaining for things. And the guy kind of smiled and he said, well, you're in luck. He said, these are $20 a piece. And my father got so excited that he was buying a fax machine for $20. So he went up to reach to grab it. And I could see him strain. And he was a big guy, big shouldered, kind of barrel-chested guy, and I saw him strain when he pulled this suitcase off of the shelf. And then when he pulled it down, I could see his whole body. Have you ever carried like a 5-gallon pail and your whole body leans to one side? Or if you're old enough to remember the compact luggable computers, or even carrying around a Macintosh. Yeah, not the most comfortable thing to have in one hand. So my father carried this thing to the front. It looked like it weighed between 50 and 75 pounds. That's my best guess these days. And took it to the front, paid for it, and he was so excited on the ride home. He was telling me about all the cool things he was going to do with this fax machine and all the people he was going to send a fax to. And I even got a little excited about it. I thought, well, you know, a fax machine, you know, is not the most exciting thing in my mind, but, you know, certainly not as cool as a computer, but I mean, a fax machine is something I've seen on TV. It's something I knew that, you know, kind of rich executives have. So we take this thing home, and my father clears off this huge space. He kind of pushes aside our PC on our oak desk in the den and makes the space for this Samsonite suitcase. It's kind of, the lid snaps open, and it actually has, I don't know what to call them, two little arms or levers that hold the lid up. And inside, I'll never forget this, inside was this huge electromechanical contraption. The best way I could describe it is it looked like a typewriter without a keyboard attached to it. So this huge hulking piece of metal with a round rubber-ish, actually, you know what? I think the drum was actually made out of metal, with a steel drum inside that looked like it could turn. And I rolled my finger on it, and sure enough, the thing turned, just like the, I don't know what to call this thing. It's on a typewriter. It's the rubber thing that that the sheet of paper is held against. The word will come to me in a minute. But anyway, my father did a double take when he saw this thing. I think he had imagined something else when he saw a fax machine. I think he was expecting something with, it would look like an oversized telephone that took paper inside of it. Well, we didn't see any place to put paper inside, and the only thing I recognized on it were these two rubber suction cups. These rubber suction cups reminded me of something that I had saw in the film War Games. David Lightman has an acoustic coupler that attaches to his modem. And I recognized that right away, and I thought, okay, well, maybe this really does work with the telephone lines. Maybe just not quite as slick as we had imagined. So my dad had called his best friend who lived down the down at one of the neighboring farms over to see this thing, because he was convinced that he was going to show up these this other farmer who he honestly kind of competed with for the latest and greatest stuff, you know, kind of keeping up with the Joneses. So he said, well, I called Darwin over, so you better get this thing working for me. And I think he was kind of smiling, like, I know you're smart enough to do this, son. So I looked at this contraption, and I imagined that it was, because it looked like a lot like a typewriter, that the paper somehow went against this metal drum. Well, I plugged it in, I stuck our phone receiver, we still had a rotary phone at that point, and I'll talk about our phone system on another podcast. That was very interesting in itself. So I stuck the phone handset into the acoustic coupler. I plugged in this suitcase, and it started moving. This big metal drums started spinning like whack, 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 because I had stuck the paper against the metal drum and it was making this flapping sound as this piece of paper is spun around like it's in a centrifuge. And my father kind of looked at it and thought, oh, okay, it looks like it's doing something at least. And I could see he was getting excited. His friend showed up and they, you know, stood around me in a circle watching me set this thing up. And I said, okay, Dad, I think it's ready to go. Can you give me a phone number to dial? So again, this is just based on what I saw in War Games. I realized that I would have to dial the number on a telephone because the fax machine itself didn't have its own dialer. So I got the number. He had a rich friend who ran a farm miles away who he knew had a fax machine. So he gave me this phone number and I dialed it. And sure enough, this other fax picked up and you could hear the familiar squealing sound, the handshaking negotiation sound that the other other fax machine was making. And so I stuck the handset inside of the acoustic coupler and we waited. We didn't know what to do. I didn't know if it was sending. I didn't know if it was receiving, but it was doing something. And this squealing, I put my ear really close to the acoustic coupler and listened. And sure enough, I could still hear the squealing. And this went on and on and on. 3, 4, 5 minutes we waited. And we didn't know what to expect, if this fax machine was going to send something to them that we had had on the piece of paper that I taped to the drum, or if it was going to receive something from them and somehow magically print it to this piece of paper I had taped to the drum. And we didn't know what to do. So 5 minutes had passed. I tried again. Nothing the second time. Finally, he called his buddy and said, look, I need you to dial my place with your fax machine and try to send me something. So he got the friend to try to fax him something. Sure enough, our phone did ring, and I did stick the handset into the fax machine. Well, nothing was working. Finally, and I could see my dad was getting a little stressed. Like he had these kind of bulgy reddish eyes whenever he got stressed, and you could see that little vein in the corner of his forehead starting to pulse. Well, his friend Darwin was kind of smiling because I think he knew things weren't going well, and that made my dad even angrier. So finally, I flipped open the suitcase lid and I looked at this piece of paper, this red piece of paper that was taped inside of it, and it was about 25 steps describing how exactly to send a fax or receive a fax or whatever this machine was that he bought. And in the bottom right corner, our neighbor Darwin spied this copyright 1967 or something, or 1971 symbol. And he just let out this huge laugh and he said, hey, James, he said, if you can't get this thing working, at least you can put it in a museum. My father was so angry. He just stomped off and he made some sort of, you know, passive aggressive comment to this farmer friend of his. And the guy was just slapping his knees, laughing. He thought it was the funniest thing he'd ever saw. Yeah, sure. Whatever this fax machine was, it was built so long ago, it probably didn't even work anymore. And honestly, we had no idea how to get it running. So that was the kind of person my father was. I was too afraid to say anything. I was kind of smiling and kind of gritting my teeth thinking, oh boy, someone's in for it tonight. Hopefully not me. And him and his friend went off and had a beer and eventually could chuckle about it. But I remember a couple of days later, I woke up going to school and I saw this fax machine suitcase put by the garbage bins that were going to be heading to the dump in a few days. I didn't say anything to my dad about it. He didn't say anything about it. And about a month later, he showed up with a real fax machine that took plain paper. It did not take plain paper. It took thermal paper on a roll. But anyway, he showed up with a real fax machine that he'd spent a couple of $100 on at the future shop. And we never brought up the tale of the first fax machine ever again. So again, folks, I'm sorry. I don't have a full episode ready for you. I'm planning on spending the rest of the day with my family and with my stepfather. So I'll be celebrating Father's Day with him and the rest of my family. So for any of you who are fathers, happy Father's Day. For those of you who have fathers that are still a part of your life, happy Father's Day. And for those of you who don't currently have fathers with you, but you might be thinking about them or wondering about them, happy Father's Day to you too. So this is Super VGA signing off. Next Sunday, I'll be with you once again. This will be for a full episode on something from the Windows 3.1 era. I've got a couple of things cooking I think you might enjoy. Haven't made a firm decision on the episode. Well, I might as well do that now. Why don't we say that our episode next week is going to be on the LucasArts, not very well known LucasArts title, Indiana Jones and His Desktop Adventures. If any of you recognize that title, please send me an email with your story or even a review about the game. I'd love that to share that with everyone else. And for anybody who doesn't know, the game was one of those little very short kind of time waster style games that could be played in less than half an hour for Windows 3.1. And it's one of the very few native LucasArts titles that exists. So I'd love to hear from you. Please send me an email. Email is vga@vga256.com. That's vga@vga256.com. Love to hear from you. And again, I'll see you in about a week. Finally, a personal note to listeners. When I recorded the first episode of this podcast way back in 2018, I was starting to write a book about growing up with computers of the 80s and 90s, modems, bulletin board systems, and even the early internet. It took several years to write it all down, but I managed to weave together over 80 of those stories, many of which I allude to in this podcast, into a novel-length book. It's called Mages and Modems, a childhood well wasted in the golden age of personal computers, games, and internet piracy. The stories are heartwarming, funny, and honestly, sometimes a little embarrassing. I don't ask for donations to keep this podcast running, so if you'd like to support me and see new episodes of the podcast, please head on over to my website at tomotama.com/books. That's tomotama.com/books, and order a copy of Mages and Modems. There you'll find a DRM-free ebook edition and a beautifully printed paperback edition that I actually designed myself. I hope the stories bring back for you some of the warm memories of the DOS, Windows, and Macintosh era that we all love.